Leaning Toward Wisdom, episode 4043. Trust me, dude, it's supposed to be good.
It's the longing that brought me here, for a home that I never had. So now when I leave, it's not that I'm gone, it's just that I'm going back. And sometimes we make mistakes, a mere mortal's voice for a god. But nobody hears the voice of a god, mistakes it for a mortal's thoughts. Tell me how faces
His name is Heath McNeese. It's from a 2012 record, The Weight of Glory. Songs inspired by the works of C.S. Lewis. This song is titled, Till We Have Faces. Now here's the great news. You can go over to noisetrade.com. You can download this record free. Noisetrade.com. Heath McNeese. It's McNeese. In fact, he's got a lot of stuff that's available free over at Noisetrade. Ran across him. I'd never heard of him until I stumbled across a little movie that he wrote entitled Fort Wayne. We'll talk about it next.
Why should he hear us babble about the things that we think we mean? The most dreadful and beautiful. I know that he's coming soon. But how will we ever meet face to face until we have faces too? Till we have faces. Till we have.
Fort Wayne is the movie. It is a quirky little movie of a struggling folk singer who is in Fort Wayne, Indiana. No, that's not home. He's on the road. And the movie starts with Heath sitting in his car in a parking lot, telling his life story to a homeless man. They're in the parking lot of a Long John Silver's. He has purchased a meal for this homeless man. And the guy's not terribly interested in Heath's story. And the movie ends with Heath enduring this 2-hour radio station interview that was set up by his manager. Now, the problem is the radio host is a full-blown idiot with a hip-hop audience. Now, Heath, he's a folk singer. Not quite what your typical hip-hop crowd would appreciate. The radio show host, he ends the 2-hour ordeal with this crazy segment that is part of his show, that is just certain to make Heath cringe. And so the producer of the show, who seems to rather like Heath, he talks with Heath during the last commercial break, right before this final segment. And then during the segment, Heath goes off in a good way on this rude caller.
You doing all right, dude? Still got one more segment left.
I hate this show. No offense, but
really hate it. Who takes off their shirt during a commercial break? A little rickrack, I don't even know what that means. Believe it or not, his real name is a lot worse. Dude, it's Leslie Masters.
It's worse. That's way worse.
Check it out, man. This last segment, it's brutal. It's called YOLO Swag Twerk. And you're going to hate it.
I hate it more than the last 2 hours.
Dude, just be ready in about 45 seconds, okay?
Yo, yo, we're back. And it's time for the last segment of the show, YOLO Swag Twerk.
Okay.
This is where one lucky caller gets to come in and go completely hamburger helper on your boy here. Today, the winner is Tasha down on Coliseum Boulevard. Yo, Tasha, you ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
Oh, I want you to get him home, girl.
Okay, I'll keep it quick. I've been listening to this guy for 2 hours now, and I hate, like, everything about him. Dude, if you're too good to be in Fort Wayne, by all means, don't come to Fort Wayne. I can guarantee you nobody's coming to your show tonight, and nobody will remember you were even here when you leave. So take your huge nose and that holier-than-thou attitude back to Atlanta, because you don't know nothing about Fort Wayne, Indiana, or what we stand for.
You done, Tasha? Don't know nothing about Fort Wayne, okay? Fort Wayne. Population, 254,555 as of a 2012 census, making it the 74th largest city in the U.S. and the second largest in Indiana. It's located approximately 18 miles west of the Ohio border and 50 miles south of the Michigan border. The Fort Wayne metropolitan area consists of Allen, Wells, and Whitley counties for an estimated population of 419,453. In addition to those counties, the combined statistical area also includes Adams, DeKalb, Huntington, Noble, and Steuben counties for an estimated population of 615,000. Do you want me to keep going, Tasha? Okay, I will. Named after American Revolutionary War statesman Anthony Wayne, the settlement was established as a trading post for European pioneers. Once a booming industrial town located in the Rust Belt, Fort Wayne's economy has diversified in recent times, now relying on transportation, distribution, logistics, healthcare, manufacturing, leisure and hospitality, and financial services. It's also a center for the defense contractor industry, which employs thousands of people. Tasha, do you want me to keep going? Okay, I will. As a cultural hub of Northeast Indiana, Fort Wayne features 15 museums and art galleries, 2 daily newspapers, a Philharmonic Orchestra, botanical garden, zoo, conference center, 3 minor league sports franchises, an NCAA Division I member school, and 86 public parks. It's also the home of the 5th largest public university in Indiana, IPFW, and 3 private universities, Concordia Theological Seminary, Indiana Institute of Technology, and the University of St. Francis. It was a 3-time All-American City Award winner in 1982, 1998, and 2009, but I know it best as the final resting place of American folklore legend Johnny Friggin' Appleseed. Now, that's what I know about Fort Wayne, Tasha, and I'm sure you know a lot more, and you can find out more on Wikipedia, but I'm going to tell you something I know that you can't find out on Wikipedia. The guy that's hosting this show is an idiot. Probably the second biggest idiot I've ever met. Biggest idiot being my manager for putting me on this show and wasting my time. That's what I know about Fort Wayne, Tasha. Why don't you tell me something about the ATL that I don't know? I'll wait.
Oh! That's the way we do it, baby. Tasha, don't you ever call this show again. That's probably the hardest thing I've ever seen in my life. Come on, let's go!
The producer is a guy who hates his job, and he manages only to get through by eating brownies filled with marijuana. After the show, the producer, he compliments Heath on this performance that you have just heard during this last segment of the radio show. And it is during that conversation that today's episode title was found.
Yo, 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 that was crazy, son. On a scale of 1 to Michael Richards, that was Kanye West. Like staring into the sun, even though it's burning my eyes out, I'm going to keep looking. Come at me. I'm a grown man. I'm 40. If anybody cared about this station, you'd be viral right now.
I felt like I was speaking in tongues. And only Fort Wayne had the gift of interpretation. I don't even know what I said to that poor girl.
You were in the zone, dude.
I was in the zone.
You were in the zone.
I was in the zone.
You were in the zone.
I was in the zone.
Look, man, I hate my job. I hate this station. I know who you are. I like your stuff and I respect you. But tonight you might have had a career-ending meltdown on live radio.
I can't believe I called Atlanta the ATL. I've literally never called it that.
That was the best part. And you know how I endure, how I get through this? Pot brownies. Pot brownies every day. You know how some people eat six small meals a day? I eat six small meals of pot brownies every day from 11 to 1 just to get through.
Oh man, get that stuff out of my face. It smells gross.
This smells like an emotional breakthrough. And I get it. You're a clean-cut, religious guy. And I respect that. But man, you need to find your own pot brownies. Yoga, house music, the WNBA, a Benny Hinn crusade, something. Because you're one of the saddest dudes I've ever met.
Folk music's supposed to be sad.
Yeah, but life isn't supposed to be sad. Like, I'm a weird guy. I get it. I freaking work for an idiot. I eat drugs. And I'm terrified at the thought of a woman seeing me with my shirt off. But I know one thing. Life is not supposed to be bad. It's supposed to be good. Trust me, dude. It's supposed to be good.
You remember when life was good, don't you? Well, I'm hoping it's good for you right now, but there's a 50-50 chance that it's not. And even if it is good, yeah, what's the harm? What's the harm in remembering other good times, right? Exactly. I suspect we should do a lot more of that. Maybe we need to listen to the pot brownie eating radio producer. It's supposed to be good. It's supposed to be good. Right before the closing credits of the movie, Heath is playing back a voicemail message that was left by his mother. Now remember, he's on the road. He's in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and he is struggling to make it in music. And she's leaving him a message to pep him up and to make him realize that he's good. Now, earlier in the movie, he has called her at 4 a.m. and she was dazed and in a fog. So here's the voicemail that Mom leaves.
Hey, son, it's me. I'm sorry I wasn't very helpful this morning when you called. I took some NyQuil before bed, and, well, that was all she wrote. But I really did love your song, even if it was sad and hard to understand. Oh, before I forget, I wanted to tell you something. I couldn't find my keys this morning. I was really running late for work. Big surprise. Well, for 45 minutes, I turned the house upside down looking for them, and I emptied out my purse twice. I accused your dad of misplacing them, and then all of a sudden, something just told me. Look down. And there they were, in my hand the whole time. Isn't that crazy? All that looking and all that searching and panicking, they were in my hand the whole time. How does that work? Sometimes I forget that we can't make things happen, son. The world doesn't bend to the force of our will as much as we'd like it to. It's vanity to say that it ever would, and honestly, who would we become if it did? But sometimes we already have it, whatever it is. Does that make sense, son? I love you. Now look down.
It's sometime in my early childhood. It is a very different time. TV is black and white. Color TV didn't really become popular until the mid-1960s, just in time to televise Vietnam and the hippie movement. Rabbit ear antennas, well, that's the norm. I mean, nobody even had outside antennas. Cable, well, that would be another couple of decades before that would come along. And along with the rabbit ears on our television was this big manual mechanical knob to change channels. Between three channels, by the way. ABC, CBS, and NBC. Bigger towns, I guess, they had one station for all three. Smaller towns usually carried two of the three. And push-button phones, well, they hadn't been invented yet. And you don't likely know this, but color TV arrived almost 15 years before push-button telephones. See, even back then, we had our priorities straight. And like all little kids, it is sometime in my early childhood, and I wake up early. especially on Saturday morning. My favorite TV show is on.
Starring that Oscar-winning rabbit, Bugs Bunny.
And also starring my fast feathered friend, the Roadrunner. Meep, meep.
Roadrunner.
Meep, meep.
If a child is after you. Roadrunner.
Meep, meep.
If he catches you, you're through. Roadrunner.
Meep, meep.
The child is after you. Roadrunner. If he catches you, you're through. The child is
meep, meep.
A crazy clown.
Meep, meep.
When will you learn that you never can mow him down?
Beep, beep.
Poor little Roadrunner never bothers anyone.
Beep,
beep.
Beep, beep.
The Bugs Bunny Roadrunner Show.
It was supposed to be good, and it was. It was good every single time. It was good every Saturday. And today, I still feel good when I hear this theme. You old enough for those to mean anything to you? Were you picturing all of these Warner Brothers cartoon characters in that first clip? Were you seeing them all parade out on the stage in single file? Sure, man. I mean, it still feels good to hear those. Trust me, dude, it's supposed to be good. And for me as a kid watching those shows, it was mostly good. Today, I watch my grandkids, and I know that for them, it's good. Now, they are in a very different world than the world that I came from, but, you know, that's just how life goes. And even so, good is good. But, you know, if my grandkids had been childhood friends of mine, back when these shows were popular, I guarantee they'd have been right there with me on a Saturday morning, watching Bugs get one over on Daffy or Elmer Fudd. And we would have laughed together at Foghorn Leghorn lifting that dog by the tail and paddling his rear end. I still laugh at that. I still have to go over to YouTube and watch that every now and then. Now, I don't know if my grandkids like it or not now, but I do know that if they would have existed back then when I was a child, I guarantee they would have thought it was good. My kid life was watching television, playing inside with matchbox cars on bad weather days, and playing outside the rest of the time. In fact, the TV shows indicated that in post-World War II America, life was good. I mean, things were pretty good all over, I suppose. At least I thought so. I mean, come on, I was a kid. But you know, the TV shows seemed to reflect that. And you can just listen to the theme songs of the shows, and you can tell.
They're creepy and they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. Their house is a museum. When people come to see them, they really are a scream. The Addams Family.
Neat. Sweet. Petite.
So get a witch's shawl on, a broomstick you can crawl on. We're gonna pay a call on the Addams Family.
The end. of the Civil War was near when quite accidentally a hero who sneezed abruptly seized retreat and reversed it to victory. His Medal of Honor pleased and thrilled his proud little family group. While pinning it on, some blood was spilled, and so it was planned he'd command F Troop, where Indian fights are colorful sights and nobody takes a lickin', where pale face and red skin both turn chicken. When drilling and fighting get them down, they know their morale can't droop, as long as they all relax in town before they resume with a bang and a boom. F Troop!
Right back and you'll hear a tale of a fateful trip that started from this tropic port aboard this tiny ship.
The mate was a mighty sailing man,
the skipper brave and sure.
Five passengers set sail that day
for a three-hour tour, a three-hour tour.
Weather started getting rough, the tiny ship was tossed.
If not for the courage of the fearless crew,
the Minnow would be lost, the Minnow would be lost.
The ship's aground on the shore of this uncharted desert isle, with Gilligan, the skipper too, the millionaire and his wife,
the movie star, and the rest are here on.
How many of those did you get? Did you get any of them? Of course, you got the last one, Gilligan's Isle. Gilligan's Island. Adam's Family, F Troop, Get Smart, Gilligan's Island. But then this show, this particular show, it wrapped up and they called it a day on May the 7th, 1966. I Dream of Jeannie. It died on May the 7th, 1966, and that day also happened to be my ninth birthday. And my birthdays have just, they've just never been the same. But this isn't about television. It's about good. It's about life being good. And for me, well, you know, as a kid, it was good. And for me, sounds and smells, they're wonderful triggers. I mean, these theme songs. And Mel Blanc's terrific voice acting as Bugs Bunny and Yosemite Sam and Foghorn Leghorn. I mean, they take me back to simpler times, more innocent times. And that was good. The smell of a leather baseball glove or a football. I mean, that can affect me today still the same way. Fall Saturdays or afternoons when school was out and the neighborhood kids lining up, choosing up sides and playing football. The smell of pine needles, that can transport me back to some piney woods where forts were built and lots of make-believe happened. It's what kids do. Well, it's what kids did. And it's easy when the biggest drama in your life is whether or not you completed your homework. Unless you're 13-year-old Gregory Jean Jr., he's that young man who was just rescued after a 4-year captivity living behind some fake wall in Jonesboro, Georgia. I turned 9, and I was sad because I dreamed a genie was going off the air. Gregory, he turned 9, and he was abducted by a father and relegated to a slave's existence for the next 4 years. I mean, there's nothing fair about that. And thankfully, his ordeal is now over. Well, that part of the ordeal is over. I'm sure he's got some tough times ahead, but I do hope his life is good. After all, it's supposed to be good. Just this week, news arrived that that missing Ohio State football player, he was found dead, self-inflicted gun wound. His family, they reported that concussions had happened in his wrestling career. He was a walk-on at Ohio State. I'm sorry, the Ohio State University. Those concussions had evidently left him dazed and confused. We may never know exactly what was going on with him, but the news is still very, very sad. And then today, somebody forwarded me a blog post titled, well, to read it, but the blog post was titled, "My Father's Suicide, Making Sense of the Nonsensical." By the way, links to all of this over the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com, just in that search this website bar. Enter the number 4043, and it'll take you right there. "My Father's Suicide, Making Sense of the Nonsensical." It is yet another sad story of how depression took a man to a place from which he just couldn't seem to escape. And this was a grandfather, a guy of my generation. No doubt family and friends, they would love one more opportunity to tell both of these men, by the way, at very different stages of their life, one a college student, one a granddad. No doubt friends and loved ones would love to say, "Trust me, dude, it's supposed to be good." But you know, I'm guessing that both of these men would have likely said, "That's exactly the problem. It's supposed to be good, but it's not good." And sadly, they evidently couldn't see it getting good anytime soon, maybe never. One of the many goals that I've had in life is to create things that will stir people. Now, it has morphed a bit during my life. Making people laugh, that's always felt good. And I was always good if I just got a smile out of people. Making people cry, that's good too. No, not by insulting them or hurting them, but by making them happy enough to cry or by hitting some heartstring that makes them cry. But, you know, I'm a sentimental guy. And empathy has always been one of my closest friends. So making that connection, that was never terribly difficult for me. It's supposed to be good. Lauren Bacon, she is a Canadian. Okay, insert your favorite joke here. Lauren Bacon, she's a Canadian. Get it? She wrote a piece that was entitled, "How Trashing Others Holds You Back." And she writes about how it feels when other people don't meet her critical standards. And she's candid about when something about their personality or their work triggers her negative judgment. It results in a lot of self-talk. It's supposed to be good. It's supposed to be better. But that can amp up the frustration and the anger at yourself and at others. And so she offers some advice in her blog post in dealing with that. "If you're irked at others," she writes, "choose one of the people on your antagonizing list. Now ask yourself, what is it about them specifically that gets under my skin? Really go to town with this. Ranting and raving are welcome, she writes. What about them do I not want for myself? What's the specific behavior I don't want to emulate? Why don't I want to emulate it? Is there fear here? Embarrassment? What do I think would happen if I behaved this way? What lessons is this person teaching me about what matters most to me? And then she asks the readers of this post to turn the tables on themselves. And she writes, once you're clear on why they're driving you crazy and what your standards really are, you can take this line of inquiry further and transform it into real change. How has my reaction to this quality held me back from claiming my own full potential? What could I do if I gave myself permission to embody this quality with discernment and in a way that's true to my principles? When I began my career in business back in the day, the objective was to create a feeling, an emotion within customers about hi-fi gear. Music. Yeah, music was the primary vehicle for it, like theme songs to these favorite childhood TV shows. Music, it can transport you. I've talked at length about the music of my youth. Just go back to episode 4018 and you can hear all about it. Because our memories are often tied to songs. And if I could secretly find out what songs were playing in various stages of your life, I could play those songs and in a flash, I could take you back to those places without saying a word. As I grew up, I began to write and draw. Well, at first I drew more than I wrote. And as time went by, I wrote more and I drew less. When I became a business leader, I took leadership very seriously. I didn't take myself very seriously. I still don't. But I did take leadership very seriously then, and I still do. I probably take it even more seriously today, if that's even possible. I wanted to help people perform better. I wanted to spur people to think and to consider their unrealized potential. And I wanted to more seriously consider my own unrealized potential. You know, like the radio show producer who was encouraging Heath, I would constantly push the businesses that I led. It's supposed to be better. It's supposed to be good, but it's supposed to be better. When a principal of a business that had hired me might seem content with the present level of performance and even defensive, you know, at the notion that things could be better, as though it was some indicator that what they'd been doing in the past wasn't good enough, I would frequently go into a monologue to stir them to consider how much better things could be. It was the age of my professional discontentment. Well, in fact, it's still the age of my professional discontentment. It's the age of my personal discontentment, too. If it's supposed to be good, then I'm of the mind it's supposed to be better. A lifetime ago, I worked for a Japanese company, a Japan-based conglomerate, Mitsubishi Electric. It was toward the late 80s. And the term Kaizen, K-I-K-A-I-Z-E-N, it was gaining great popularity in those days. And by the way, it means good change. But by that time, I had already read books about W. Edwards Deming and his work in post-war Japan. In 1947, General Douglas MacArthur, he called on Deming to help with the 1951 Japanese census. Deming was this quality control expert, and engineers in Japan, they would ask him to instruct them in some of his areas of expertise. And, well, he is acknowledged as a primary source of what would become Japan's drive toward continuous improvement and their massive success, especially in the field of electronics. Today, Korea, Taiwan, China, yeah, they're they're crowding in. But back in the 80s, Japan was, they were the end all be all when it came to manufacturing. Motorola, they would later devise this Six Sigma in the mid 80s. And then General Electric, they would take Six Sigma to this whole new level. But good change or continuous improvement, that took hold on the other side of the world from America in post-war Japan, starting in the late 40s and early 50s, led by W. Edwards Deming. I was interested in reading history. And as an adult, I was increasingly interested in business history. That's why I had happened onto Deming's work and his story. Now, the statistical stuff, he was a statistical guru, that was way over my head, but I embraced the concepts and the notions of making things better. It was inherent in my worldview, I guess. Good is never good enough. It can always be better. Can it? I mean, it's supposed to be good. Then it's supposed to be better. Dr. Henry Cloud, he made a Facebook post recently, and it had an interesting first paragraph. It's a lengthy post, and I'll put a link to this in the show notes as well. Writes Dr. Cloud, "The time when you get to hopelessness can be one of the best moments for your future." Let me repeat this. The time when you get to hopelessness can be one of the best moments for your future. To give up hope that something is going to change when it's not going to, get you unstuck immediately and brings energy. It brings life to the sickness of hope deferred. And I understand his point, don't you? I mean, there's power in getting to a point when your back is up against the wall and you have to surrender to all the stuff that wasn't working. And then you can move forward. Well, assuming that you can see things getting better by trying something else. If it's supposed to be good and it's not, then we're forced to consider that we may be doing it all wrong. And we all get it wrong sometimes. And some of us get it wrong more than others. Because getting to good can be hard work. Few things fill my web-based information stream more than stories of failure or stories of overcoming failure. Barbara Corcoran of Shark Tank, you know her. She's the real estate guru in New York City. She said recently that I am so good at failure, it's like my specialty. In fact, she gave a speech about it over at Entrepreneur Magazine.
Probably the most important thing is I learned that in building a business, you've got to be really good at one thing, which is called, I call it handling failure. I am so good at failure, it's like my specialty. I can take a hit, and it's almost like my IQ is too low to lay low. I kind of pop back up, like, hit me again, I'm pissed now. And that ability to pop back up is true of anyone who succeeds in their field. You can't not have that. I remember I had $77,000 in profit for the first time 1 year. I was so excited, and I told Esther we were going to spend it. Esther, I said, we're going to take all of our apartments, hire a videograph guy, go in, video all the apartments, cut them into 1, 2, and 3 bedrooms, put them on 3 separate tapes. We're going to call them Homes on Tape, and I'm going to make a logo that says H-O-T. Get it, Esther? Hot. And it's only going to cost us like probably $50,000. In the end, it cost us $77,000. We almost got divorced over it. We blew the total money. I put my salespeople's face in front of every single listing. I had a professional makeup lady look everybody look beautiful. What do you think happened to those Homes on Tape? It was a terrible failure. And you know why? My salespeople wouldn't hand them out. They smiled at me, but they didn't hand them out because they were afraid their customer would call the other salesperson. Of course they were afraid of that. She looked better. She had a better listing, so they didn't want to expose their customer to other options. I'm so depressed and thinking, what an ass I am. How can I have pissed away our only profit? I was really feeling terrible. And then that night, my husband was a Navy captain, and he had just come back from South Korea where he played war games every year. But he said, it was amazing this year. We played it on this new government thing called the Internet. Well, the Internet, what's that? He starts to tell me what it is. I run home, take all my videos, pay a guy, a young kid at my office who knew about technology, sort of, put all my tapes, just download them, boom, 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 boom. I registered the website, Corcoran.com, and that week, boom, it was like a shark, boom. We had two sales out of London, and it would be almost 4 years before my first competitor put listings up online. Of all the salespeople I analyzed over all the years and trying to figure out what makes a phenomenal salesperson and what doesn't. And salespeople are entrepreneurs. So I would analyze, is it the connections? You know, she's got the connection from Harvard. She's got no connections. No, it's not that. Is it the time you put in? Is it how hard you work? You know, I found out that none of those things divided the people who were making $3 million a year in commissions and someone who was making $54,000 and change. What divided them? You know what I found? There were two things. One was insecurity. And the second thing I found is that the great salespeople didn't have the ability to feel sorry for themselves.
So success is, you got to be a whack-a-mole. Well, you got to be the mole. You just got to keep popping up. If it's supposed to be good and it's not, we're glad to know that we're not alone, aren't we? I mean, doesn't it make you feel better knowing that one of the sharks on Shark Tank, that she failed colossally? I mean, don't you rather enjoy knowing that there was a time in her life when it wasn't good? Don't lie. You know that's true. And there's also this paradox, though. Actually, there's tons of paradoxes. And paradoxes fascinate me. For instance, as much as we enjoy knowing the struggles of others, we are constantly in search of easy. I was scrolling through the vast array of Black Friday and Cyber Monday offerings from life coaches, and there are some pretty fantastic hooks. For instance, I'll show you how I make $200,000 a month coaching clients. Well, sign me up. And we think, yeah, it's supposed to be good. $200,000 a month is good. That's really good. And I read it and I laughed. And hey, maybe he is. I'm good for him. But then I turned around and I look on my bookshelf and there's this 2006 book by Michael Masterson that is just screaming at me. It's entitled 7 Years to Seven Figures: The Fast Track Plan to Becoming a Millionaire. 7 years? Now, I have to admit, Masterson, he was a guilty pleasure for me. He was the longtime Agora publisher of Early to Rise. He's now retired, but I always, always, always enjoyed his writing. And by the way, it's been almost 8 years. Start to say nine, but let's see, 2006. Yeah, it's been almost 8 years since I read that book, by the way. 7 years to seven figures. I'm a year past the deadline. Hey, but I'm a slow learner. It's supposed to be good. It doesn't mean it's supposed to be fast, because good takes time. Better, well, that takes even longer. Bad just takes a toll. And worse, well, worse is worse than bad. And worse, as we have seen, and as we constantly do see, man, worse can take a deadly toll. Now, here's the great thing. The great thing is we get to choose. Yeah, we get to choose. So choose wisely. Trust me, dude. It's supposed to be good.
Standing here
His name is David Bearwald. It's a 1990 record. The name of the record is Bedtime Stories. The song is Good Times. I was thinking the other day as I was listening to some tunes from the 80s and the 90s, man, where has rock music gone? I have listened to this record a lot. It's a great record. And I confess I did not go to iTunes and check, but man, I hope it's there. And if it is, you need to buy it. And I don't care. Hey, if you have to go to a used CD store to find some of this stuff, it's worthwhile. David Bearwald, Bearwald. These are good times. And I think it's up to you and me to make them so. Bad times take a toll. Good times, I know, can lure us into thinking that, well, it's good today and it'll always be good. And life just doesn't work that way. Unfortunately, life is not linear. It is cyclical. If these are good days for you, then I'm happy for you. Rejoice and consider yourself blessed. And if they're not, hang tough. Hang tough. Just know that you are not alone. There's a lot of us out here that are fighting the fight. And you know, even the people that you see on the internet, all these people that seem to be fantastically successful, you do realize that there's a lot you don't know, don't you? You do realize that there's kind of this persona that people put online. Yeah, there's some of us, he says sheepishly, some of us that may share more than we should, but I don't know. It's just how I roll. It's how I choose to do it. I want to thank you for listening to the podcast. I want to give a special shout out to Jim Collison, theaverageguy.tv. Jim left me the very first review at iTunes for the podcast all these years. And hey, there you go. Shout out to Jim. Jim is part of the Facebook group. I hope you would be too. You can find links to that over the website, leaningtowardwisdom.com. You can find the show notes for today's episode by inserting the number 4043 over at the website. My name is Randy Cantrell. Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas is where I hail from, inside the Yell Studio. Ghost Christmas past, like faded streamers feebly dangle. The ripped party lasts, time and lies and the way that they've been handled. And they fall to the floor, they wrap around and broken all radio blame. These are good times. These are good times. Speaking of rock and roll, 80s style, 90s style, and it was different. And if you're old enough like me, then you appreciate it. And if you're younger, dive into it, investigate it, check it out. Yeah, I know, to each his own. Hot House Flowers. I'm going to play you this last song. It is from a 1992 record. Hot House Flowers is the name of the group. The record was entitled Songs from the Rain, and this song is entitled Be Good. So I'm going to leave you with that admonition. Trust me, dude, it's supposed to be good. See ya.
heart out of me, I was staring back at you. And you said I was being secretive, saying yes, maybe you're right. But if there's logic to any of this madness, you'll find it in my eyes. And be good,
be good,
be kind,
be kind,
be truthful,
let's be free.
And keep your holy, lovely eyes on me. I got a history of questions, the truth I can only fear. What matters to me the most is what is there and what is real. We could start by shaking each other or talk about something else. And I know in the end we could get to the point where we could go get some rest and be good,
be good,
be kind,
be kind,
be truthful and be free.
And keep your holy, loving eyes on me.
Be good,
be good,
be kind,
be kind,
be truthful and be free. About soft drinks, started talking about our lives. There is answers in the music, and there are answers in the words. And if we stop talking in circles, we might get closer.